Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts odds maker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 110 event, which takes place in Auckland, New Zealand. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we won 3.6 units overall for UFC 212, after going 2-0 on our premium bets. We also won our one-unit free bet on Matthew Lopez. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 110 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a lightweight bout between Donghyung Maestro Kim, who is 14-8-3, and T-Belt Gowdy, who is 11-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Kim, minus 185, the comeback on Gowdy at plus 145. And right now, looking over at our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, it is currently Gowdy minus 110, and Kim is minus 110. So it dropped all the way to a pick currently. A little bit surprising. I mean, that's one of the reasons I opened Kim a slight favorite to begin with, is because I think in my mind that Gowdy's not going to get a ton of respect from the bettors out there. I mean, look how he's performed so far in the UFC. He was rocked and choked out by Paclin. He got choked out by Mercier, and then he got knocked out by Laprise. And outside of that, I mean, he actually was looking okay on the Ultimate Fighter show. He's an Ultimate Fighter season 22 veteran, and he lost to Tamer by decision. And we all know how good Tamer's been in the UFC. So that was a respectable loss for sure. You know, before his UFC career, he had a respectable resume outside of the UFC as well. So the truth is, Gowdy's a very good fighter. He just hasn't lived up to expectations yet. He hasn't showed what he's capable of. I mean, the guy is a pretty well-rounded fighter. His striking is, I think, highlights his ability overall. I mean, he's got some power on the feet. He has some ability to mix things up. His boxing's pretty good overall. He's clean and technical at times. His conditioning is actually okay. I mean, he does tend to gas as the fight goes on a little bit, but nothing too drastic. And I think it has definitely been improving. And I think, I mean, we haven't just got to see his improvement on that end either too much, because he's getting finished early. But he's been training with Jackson's. I think this is, I believe, his third camp now at the famed Greg Jackson camp. So he has good training partners around him, and he has the skill to be a decent fighter in the UFC, and he just hasn't lived up to expectations yet. Now, Kim, on the other hand, I think is starting to earn a little bit more respect. He's the type of fighter that we all knew coming into the UFC. He was kind of a crazy man as far as his striking style. I mean, he's the type of guy that's going to go out there and finish fights. That's what he does. On the feet, he's a little bit wild, aggressive, but he's dangerous. He can get the job done. He can knock you out. On the ground, his wrestling, as he showed, honestly, against O'Reilly, is a little bit underrated. It's better than most of us thought it would be. So he's got some wrestling to go along with it, and he also has a sub game as well. So Kim is also a pretty well-rounded fighter that can finish fights. And I thought with the win over O'Reilly, not that O'Reilly's a big respectable name that he has on his resume, but still, I think Kim is making some progress, because he was in those, you know, those, well, that Reyes fight in particular, he was in that crazy good scrap that, I mean, it was one of the better fights of the year. I mean, those guys were going at it. So Kim has that kind of reputation. Then he backs it up with a solid win in his next fight, even though that Reyes fight ended up a loss for him. So I thought he was starting to pick up some momentum amongst the bettors, and he would get a little bit more respect, but that wasn't the case. Early action came in on Gowdy, and I do think it's going to be a competitive fight. It's honestly a coin flip type of fight. I think the first person that makes a mistake here that leaves his chin exposed is probably going to get their lights put out. Could go either way. I mean, both these guys are a little bit chinny, to say the least. So, and both these guys offensively are pretty talented. So it's a tough one to call. And I think a pick 'em price where it is now is actually a little bit more fair than my opener is as well. So I've been backing Gowdy for a while. I thought his talent would eventually show through, and the guy's been burning me a little bit. I mean, with these losses along the way. So I don't know. It's frustrating. I think I'm going to lean with him a little bit. It's just one of those things that I wouldn't bet this fight. I would stay away from this fight, honestly, as far as betting perspective goes, because both these guys are so flawed defensively that it could realistically go either way. I'm going to pick Gowdy, though, because, again, I know he's got the talent to win fights in the UFC. So I'm hoping he turns the corner here and shows it a little bit and gets a W over Kim and keeps his roster job. Because, I mean, suffering three losses in the UFC these days isn't really going to keep your job. So he's lucky he's getting another shot to begin with. I mean, it is what it is, but it's true. So I think the UFC realized that the guy is better than he showed so far, and they're giving him another chance to prove that. So I guess I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Gowdy myself, and hopefully he does come through here.
Yeah, Gowdy has been a massive disappointment, and I'm just ready to just throw in the towel on the guy. I just think the UFC is keeping him around to give people wins at this point. I mean, I know his striking is good, but who cares if you have good striking if you can't take a punch? I mean, the people he's getting knocked out by aren't even known as really heavy hitters. I mean, Teemu Pakelin, really? And even Chad Laprise, I mean, he's not exactly a powerhouse on the feet either. So I just have not been impressed with Gowdy whatsoever. I know his last two fights, he was a pretty decent underdog in both of them against, you know, two more popular Canadian fighters, but, the UFC debut was a massive disappointment. And I think, honestly, that Maestro Kim has looked better overall. I mean, he's picked up a couple wins, or at least he picked up that last win where he used his ground game instead of just brawling the whole time. So, Kim's just shown me a little bit more, even though he did, you know, lose his UFC debut at welterweight and then got knocked out in his second UFC fight. But I think this time around, he, you know, I think that if he uses his ground game, he should win. Or if he gets suckered into a brawl against Gowdy, even though Gowdy is a more technical kickboxer, that maybe all it takes is one good punch and Gowdy goes down anyway, and then Kim can use his ground game. So, yeah, I'm siding with Kim here. Now, dropping down to the women's strawweight division, we have JJ Aldrich, who is 4-2, taking on Chanmi Jian, who is 5-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Aldridge, minus 175, the comeback on Gian at plus 135. And looking over five dimes right now, it's Aldridge minus 220. The comeback on Gian is plus 180. Now, honestly, there's not a lot of information on the debuting Gian. I know she's taking the fight on short notice. I mean, I believe it's only less than a couple weeks out or so that she's taking this fight on short notice. So she hasn't had a lot of time to prepare. But realize that she did recently get signed by Invicta. So Invicta had Gian on their radar to begin with, and I'm pretty sure that that's why the UFC ended up snatching her over, because they were looking for somebody to fill this void. And Invicta had her available, and there's a lot of high remarks or high expectations for Gian. I mean, if you look deeper and you read about her and all the hype that she has around her, a lot of people are thinking that she's a legit fighter that has championship potential one day. So that's how much hype is around her. There's not much footage out there. You have to dig really, really deep. And in fact, recently I just came across some footage. It took a while, and it's because of Brian Heminger here on our podcast that was able to find some footage on her. So I thank Brian, because I got to check her out a little bit deeper. But a lot of this was tough. It was just based on a lot of hype and a lot of what you think is going to happen here and what her style is. But if you look at some of the footage, again, if you dig deep, it is available out there. But Gian is really not ready yet. I mean, if you look at her resume without footage, you could tell that all the people that she's faced so far have been lower level competition. I mean, so she's basically beat a bunch of cans. I mean, let's say what it is. That's exactly what happened. So to begin with her facing Aldridge in the UFC, that's a huge step up in competition. We know that. Again, without footage, you could see all that. And you realize that Gian is a finisher. She's capable of knocking girls out, obviously. But again, against lower level competition, she's having that success. Aldridge, on the other hand, I mean, throughout her career, I know she's still only like 4-2 officially as a pro in MMA. But beyond that, she's had some experience against talented fighters, and she's hung in there against really good fighters. I mean, she's close to really turning a corner and becoming a really, really good fighter. I mean, she has a ton of potential as well. I think she has good stand-up. I think her ground and wrestling. I mean, against better grinders, obviously she's going to suffer. And even though her takedown defense is okay, she can get put on her back, controlled a little bit. We've seen that happen already. But overall, Aldrich is decent in that regard as far as being able to keep the fight upright. And in most cases, she's able to outstrike most of her opponents as well. She has a third degree black belt in Taekwondo. And on the ground, I believe she's a BJJ brown belt. So she has a pretty diverse game in her own right. And she is getting better. She's solid overall. I mean, she's still young enough where she's going to get better and better fight by fight. So I think that she, I mean, sky's the limit for her as well. So this is a tough step up in competition for Gian. And especially after you look back at the footage now, Gian, I mean, it seems to me like she tires out pretty fast when she's even starting her matchups against the, even the lower level competition. I mean, her, so I'm having a little bit of question marks with her gas tank a little bit. I'm having question marks with how clean her technique is, because it looks like she does, she is an aggressive fighter, which is good, but she gets a little bit sloppy at times. And then on the ground, she tends to make a little bit of mistakes as well, even though she does have some nasty ground and pound. So she still has a lot of holes in her game. And I think that Aldrich is going to probably be able to expose a lot of those holes as the fight progresses and pick her apart. So my pick is Aldrich. And honestly, right now at the current line, minus 220 for Aldrich, plus 180 for Gian. I think it's right. It might actually be still a little bit low. So I really, I'm confident in picking Aldrich after what I've seen and what I heard overall from Gian. So that's going to be my pick. Aldrich it is.
Well, first off, I need to know where you heard that Gian could be a future champion, because I want to, you know, find that person and give him a good slapping. Now, onto this fight. Yeah, Gian, I mean, she's got potential, but you got to remember multiple things here. Okay. She is 19 years old. She is taking this fight on about 1 week's notice. Most of her opponents were making their MMA debuts when she fought them, and she's barely been fighting for like a year. So, and then from the film that I was able to uncover on her, she is sloppy. She's raw. She has massive holes in her defenses, both with grappling and on the feet. And, she's reckless. She throws like 12 to 6 elbows repeatedly. She had a fight, pause because she was just kneeing her opponent in the face on the ground repeatedly, and she did it again in her next fight. So, man, I don't think there's a lot to like here. I mean, she's aggressive. She has some power, but that's about it. Aldrich should have her beat in every single facet of mixed martial arts. Aldrich is a solid overall technical striker. I mean, she's not a world beater that's going to just knock people out, but I think Aldrich should just get the better of her on the feet. And if it does go to the ground, I mean, Aldrich isn't, you know, a monster on the ground, but she knows the basics. And I think that that should be enough to beat Gian on the ground too, if this fight goes to the floor. So I just think Gian is overmatched. And as Nick mentioned, fighters do usually look way better when they make their UFC debut. But Gian, you know, those fights we watched, those were just a few months ago, like late last year. So you can't improve that much in that short of a time span, even when you are young and adding just a ton to your game. So yeah, I think that JJ Aldrich wins this fight extremely easily. Now, moving on to the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a welterweight contest between Keiichi Kunimoto, who is 18-6-2 with one no contest, and Zach Otto, who is 14-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Otto minus 260, the comeback of Kunimoto, at plus 180. Looking over five times right now, it's Otto minus 345, the comeback of Kunimoto is plus 285. Not really that surprised by the early action on Otto. I mean, despite him coming in on short notice, only a couple weeks out, he took this fight. He's in for Warley Alves. So stylistically, it is a favorable matchup for Otto if he could keep the fight standing and off the ground. I mean, Kunimoto is a sneaky good fighter on the ground. But I guess we should mention first, too, as well, that Kunimoto has been out since February of 2015, has lost to Magny. An injury forced him out of the Jingling fight, and he's been, you know, out since that time. So Kunimoto has been on the shelf for a little while. He's making his return, and he's making return against, again, a short notice a competitor, but a guy stylistically that is going to be a tough out, because Otto, I think on the feet, has a big advantage. I mean, he's a strong fighter. He has some decent wrestling. He's got decent takedown defense overall as well. And I think he is the better boxer and the better striker on the feet. Kunimoto is going to have to get this fight down to the floor. I mean, that's exactly how he gets most of his wins, is by grinding his opponents out, by looking for slick, sneaky, good subs. I mean, he gets around your neck. He takes your back. You're in some trouble with Kunimoto. I mean, a guy definitely has a really good ground game, and he's capable of finishing fights. So Otto cannot afford to, I think, play too much on the ground here with Kunimoto. Now, Otto's jiu-jitsu is not bad himself. I mean, he's capable of finishing fights on the ground as well, but I still give the edge on the ground to Kunimoto. So that's one little area that he does have an advantage over Otto, but the rest of it, despite the short notice, I don't think Otto's even going to gas too much. I mean, he's the type of fighter, to me, it seems like he's always in training camp and he's always in decent shape. So I don't think it's going to be one of those situations where he took it on a couple weeks notice and he's just going to be totally gassed out after a round. I think, in fact, he's going to be so dangerous, and even in the first round against Kunimoto, that he could finish this fight early. So this is a good stylistic matchup for Otto, and that's why I think he stepped in there and took this fight. He knows it could be, if he fights his fight, it could probably be an easy win. I mean, Kunimoto is a tough guy. He's not easy to finish, but I think right now, I mean, he's not getting any younger. I believe he's 36 years old with the time off. Everything that comes into play in the stylistic matchup against Otto, not a good matchup. I think Otto can finish this fight. If not, I think Otto stays out of trouble and at least wins, I don't want to say competitive decision, but a pretty clear type of decision over Kunimoto. So I do got respect for Kunimoto's game. He is a dangerous guy. You got to take him serious. But I think that Otto has a higher ceiling, and I think he's going to get the W here and kind of keep on working up that ladder a little bit. So that's my point of view, at least on this one.
This fight could definitely be very evenly matched. I mean, Otto and Kunimoto both are pretty solid technical ground fighters. Both have pretty solid wrestling. Both are decent with submissions. Otto has a lot of experience in the U.S. Kunimoto, a lot of experience in, you know, Asian promotions. And, you know, honestly, this fight could go either way. The main difference, though, is the fact that Kunimoto, I think, is a little bit less durable. Kunimoto has been out for about 2 years. So, with all those being said, even though I know Zach Otto is taking this fight on short notice, the one thing Otto has going for him is, you know, he's not exactly a massive welterweight. So I think it doesn't hurt him as bad. The penalty isn't as severe for him taking a fight on relatively short notice. And it's still about 2 to 3 weeks for him to prepare. So I think that Zach Otto at this point is just a little bit better and a little bit more prepared to step into an octagon and fight than Kunimoto, who's kind of just been MIA for a little bit. So I think Otto has a little bit more power, a little bit more durability, and I don't see Kunimoto, you know, dominating this fight on the ground like he probably wants to, because Otto is a pretty solid wrestler. So I can see Otto controlling the stand-up, and even though he's not a powerhouse striker, I think he can do enough to win a decision. So my pick's going to be Zach Otto. Now, dropping down to the flyweight division, we have John Moraga, who is 16-6, taking on Ashkin Mokhtarian, who is 13-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Moraga -230, the comeback on Mokhtarian at +170. Right now, it's actually Moraga -165. The comeback is +145 of Mokhtarian. So a little drop in price, of course. A lot of people coming in on Mokhtarian. A lot of that is, I think, fading Moraga at this point of his career, because, I mean, this guy was, let's not forget, a title contender at the flyweight division. And at the beginning of his career, I mean, the guy really put together a nice little run towards the title shot. I mean, I think actually officially it was only a couple fights that he got under his resume. I mean, that's how shallow the flyweight division is. It's getting a little bit deeper. It's getting a little bit better. But I mean, at first when he came into the UFC debut, he won a couple fights, basically got a title shot. But it wasn't just because of that. I mean, it's his background. Moraga obviously trains at a good camp. He's been in the game for a while. His background in wrestling, his boxing's good. He's got some submissions to go along with it. So another guy that's capable of fighting anywhere the fight takes place. He's a really solid fighter. Unfortunately for him, he's been struggling now. I mean, since that, you know, submission loss to Demetrius Johnson, he ended up getting a very competitive decision win over Ortiz that realistically could have went the other way. He obviously lost to Dotson, but his win over Scoggins was remarkable because, I mean, he needed to catch that choker. He probably wouldn't have won that fight. So he did get that sick guillotine choke that he has. And that's the thing you got to worry about. If you're able to plant Moraga on his back, he gets around your neck while you're doing so, you're probably going to tap. I mean, he's got a sick guillotine choke. So outside of that, though, he's been on a little funk now because he ends up losing to quality competition. I mean, Benavidez was able to decision him. Nicolau was able to beat him as well. And then, of course, his last fight against Pettis was able to beat him. So he's on a little funk here, a three-fight losing skid. And I think a lot of people are thinking, all right, this guy's done, man. I mean, he's been in the UFC now for a little while. And anybody that has a heartbeat that is in the flyweight division that has – a little bit of wrestling and some power, whatever, can outstrike him and all this. I don't know if Mokhtarian's that guy, though. That's the problem here. Mokhtarian's the type of fighter that, if you look at him, I mean, he does have some really good attributes about him, and he has a lot of potential. I mean, but he's not a young gun by any means. He's 31 years old already, too, and his level of experience is okay. It's not bad, but again, it's not UFC level. So this is a big step up in competition for Mokhtarian here in this spot. But overall, for his background, I mean, this is another spot. A little bit unlike Gian, because there is some footage on Mokhtarian. A lot of it's not as recent as you'd want it to be. That's one issue I have with it. So I'm sure Mokhtarian has improved a little bit from what the footage is out there. But what you do know on him, I mean, he's a powerful little guy. I mean, he's short, stocky, has a nice athletic build. He does put a lot of pressure, whether it's on the feet or on the ground. I mean, he has some power in both areas. He does get some takedowns. He's able to toss you on the ground, get on top, and you know, work his ground and pound pretty well. He's got a submission game to go along with it as well. So he does have another one of these guys. I mean, in most cases these days, anybody that makes the UFC is probably going to be well-rounded. So I know it gets time and time again, we keep saying these about these fighters, but it's true. I mean, these guys – I mean, in 2017 in MMA, you are getting well-rounded fighters, and this is another one here. For Mokhtarian, the problem I have with him, he doesn't really specialize in anything. He's just solid everywhere. So that could be a good thing, but it could also be bad against a fighter like Moraga. So what are you going to dominate Moraga in? Is it going to be the wrestling? I don't know if he's going to have that kind of wrestling to put him on his back and just control him like that. Is it going to be the stand-up? I'm not sure. I think Moraga's stand-up is actually okay. It's not bad. He might have the edge over Mokhtarian here as well. So there's a lot of factors that go into this that makes me think Mokhtarian could probably hang with Moraga a little bit, but I'm not ready to say that he can step in and defeat a guy that's kind of an upper tier fighter in the flyweight division, despite a 3-fight losing streak. I mean, if you look at, again, his losses for Moraga, they've been to quality competition. I mean, above and beyond what Mokhtarian's faced in his career. So I kind of give him a pass for that kind of stuff. So we'll see here. If Moraga loses this fight to Mokhtarian, I mean, that means Mokhtarian is obviously a better fighter than I'm thinking he is, because I mean, it is a big step up in competition. And I think that Mokhtarian's going to make some decent strides moving forward and be a solid and a realistic competitor at 125 that you have to keep an eye out. Or that could mean that Moraga is definitely on decline and doesn't have much left. So we'll see how it all plays out, but I'm hoping it's a pretty good fight, but I really have to side with Moraga here because I just don't think Mokhtarian's ready for this level quite yet. Now, outside of this fight, I do think Mokhtarian will win some fights in the flyweight division if matched appropriately. I just don't think he's ready quite yet for Moraga. So my pick is Moraga.
The biggest factor in this fight for me is John Moraga's inconsistency. I mean, sometimes the guy can go out there and look like a world beater when he picks up those nasty stoppage victories, like the two that started his UFC career, or even the quick submission of Justin Scoggins. But other times he just doesn't show up at all, and then he'll sometimes eke out decisions he didn't deserve. I mean, he is just an extremely frustrating fighter to be a fan of. Now, Mokhtarian is a guy that he's been part of the Australian Top Team gym. His brother actually owns it, I believe. And he's worked his way up. He's paid his dues on this Australian circuit. Now, he hasn't exactly faced top competition, and I expect that John Moraga will be the toughest fight of his career thus far. But Mokhtarian does have some decent skills. He's pretty good on the ground. He's got an active submission game. He's got some power. And if he can get top position, he has some decent ground and pound. So overall, he is a bit of a threat. That being said, John Moraga should just be better than him. I don't see how Mokhtarian can get Moraga down, because he doesn't really have great wrestling. Like he's most of his ground attacks revolve around hip tosses and throws, body clinches, and I just don't think Moraga's going to let him get that close. And Moraga should have just as much power, if not more, on the feet. Moraga's very durable. I mean, the only guy that's ever even stopped him really on the feet was John Dodson, and even in that fight, like, he never actually, like, got knocked out. It was more a cut after he was getting beat up on a little bit. So I don't see Mokhtarian knocking him out on the feet. And I just think what happens here is Moraga just ekes this out with just being a little bit better by keeping it standing, doing a little bit more on the feet, and just weathering Mokhtarian's early storm. So I think Mokhtarian will put up a fight. I think this is a guy that can get a win or two inside the octagon. But I think Moraga should win this fight. But I have been wrong before, and Moraga has been upset by guys making their UFC debuts before. It just happened a couple fights ago. So I could be proven wrong, but I'm going to side with John Moraga here. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have another UFC newcomer in Luke Jumo, who is 11-3, taking on Dominique Steele, who is 14-8. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Steele minus 180, the comeback on Jumo at plus 140. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's Steele minus 150, the comeback on Juno. Jumo is at plus 130. So 10 cent drop in the dog line. Margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two-way action coming into this fight. A little bit more dog action coming in on Jumo at the time of the recording. I can see it. I mean, the guy definitely has a legit shot here against Steele. I mean, you have to be – for me, I respect Dominic Steele. He's been one of these kind of journeyman fighters that has – I mean, he's from Ohio as well, so a lot of the Ohio people – that's my home state, obviously, as well. So a lot of the Ohio people know that this guy's been on the scene locally here for many years, and he's been, just – you watch his improvement. I mean, the guy's been putting in work, and he's been getting better fight by fight throughout his career. And the guy, his work ethic is really strong, and he deserves to have this UFC shot, and he deserves to be where he's at right now. And he's had a little bit of success in the UFC. Unfortunately for him, again, back-to-back losses to Roberts and Court McGee, high-level competition, didn't really go well for him. But in my opinion, he's making some strides. He didn't get – I mean, I hate to say it, it sounds bad, but he didn't get finished in those fights, which is not too bad. And then we were just talking about Kim earlier in this podcast as well. I mean, in fact, the first fight of the night where he's fighting Gowdy. Well, Steele has a win over Kim, and you know, the slam was pretty nasty. The finish that he was able to get on Kim was pretty cool. So, I mean, Steele has that kind of wrestling and that kind of ground game that he can put you on your back. He can control the fight. He could drop some bombs on you, and he's a very smart fighter when he knows what he has to do and when he tries to implement his game plan. A lot of times he can do that. And against Jimmu here, he can really implement that, because, I mean, if any kryptonite for Jimmu, it's definitely his ground game. I mean, that's the area he needs to work on. He's a striker. Everybody knows what they're getting into with him. I mean, he's a powerful striker. If you stay upright with Jumu, he's going to end up making you pay for it. And this is the case here against Steele. If you can see anything wrong with Steele's game, it's that chin. I mean, again, it can't be helped, but he's definitely a chinny fighter. And against a guy like Jimmu, he's going to suffer if he keeps this fight standing too long. So he desperately needs to get this fight underground and control him in his realm. For Jimmu, again, I think what you're going to see in him is his ability to try to sprawl and brawl and keep it upright and try to knock Steele out. Now, at times, I know people are pretty harsh on Jimmu's takedown defense because he has been put on his back, and against the better fighters that he's faced, especially, he's been put on his back. So I get it, but he definitely knows that that's a flaw in his game, and he's going to be working on it for sure. And I don't know if he's ready to stop Steele's takedowns quite yet. So he needs to keep this fight upright, and he needs to do so long enough that he has success, because each round he's going to probably end up on his back. I mean, that's a given. So he's going to have to take that small window that he's got and utilize it to get this win. So that's why I'm going to pick Steele in this fight. I think Steele is, again, the more savvy vet. He knows how to implement his game plan, and he probably will. But I think Jimmu might be a live dog here if he's able to, again, keep the fight upright and land on Steele, because he has the path to victory, and that's just it. Steele has been knocked out, and Jimmu is definitely a powerful, powerful striker, and he's capable of knocking him out. So another tough one at the betting window, but I have to pick Steele because I think stylistically, if he fights his game, he's going to win his fight.
Yeah, Nick pretty much explained what's going to happen here. Jumo is a very talented striker. but he's not very good on the ground, and he doesn't have great takedown defense. I mean, he can maybe stop that initial takedown, especially if you shoot from too far away, but if Dominic Steele can just close the distance and get a hold of this guy, I think it's only a matter of time until he drags him to the floor. Steele is powerful, he's strong, he has kind of a bit of a suffocating top game when he does get you to the floor, and he's not the worst striker in the world, so maybe he can hold his own long enough to get it to the floor. So I just expect that Steele's going to close the distance, grab a hold of Jumo, and take him down. Because if he doesn't, Jumo is an extremely talented striker. He has power, he has technique, and if Steele screws around, then he could get knocked out. Steele has been knocked out multiple times in the past, including in his UFC debut. So if Jumo has an opportunity, it's going to be at the beginning of each round. And for Steele, he just needs to get this fight to the floor as quick as possible and then just beat up on Jumo as much as he can, trying to get a finish probably. Because, I mean, if he lets this fight go to three rounds and tries to win a decision that way, that's three opportunities to start each round on the feet for Jumo to knock him out. And Jumo is good enough on the feet that he might be able to make one of those opportunities count. So I'm siding with Dominic Steele, but I am exercising caution because Jumo hits hard enough and he's talented enough on the feet that he could stop this fight while it's standing. But I am going to pick Dominic Steele. Now moving on to the preliminary card headliner. In the lightweight division, we have Damian Brown, who is 17-9, taking on Vince Bichel, who is 9-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up at Bichel, -150, the comeback on Brown at +110. Right now looking over at Five Dimes, it's Brown -120. The comeback on Bichel is at even money. So line flipped, more action coming in Brown's way. Not really surprised, considering that Bichel has been out for over 3 years after his unanimous decision upset win over Njokwani, which was a pretty big win and a positive momentum for him on his side. But unfortunately, in that fight, he suffered a broken orbital bone from it. I mean, that tells you how tough the guy is. I mean, he fought through it, but, and then he also had, after that, when he was recovering, he had a torn bicep, I believe. He had some issues with his injuries, but then after that, he actually had a workers' comp case that's kind of drug this out a little bit more. So it's not like he's been injured for 3 years, but he had a workers' comp case that did keep him out of training and did impact his life negatively for sure. And that's the reason he has been on the shelf for so long. So now he's finally back. From all I'm hearing and all accounts, it seems like he's in decent shape. He's ready to go back in to, you know, to the UFC and kind of continue off where he, you know, where he was at, and which is actually a promising guy in the lightweight division, because Bichel is another one of these guys that has a well-rounded game. I mean, I like his boxing. He's got some power in the feet. He has the capability of finishing you on the feet. He has a decent wrestling game, underrated wrestling. I mean, he proved that against Njokwani. Njokwani is one of those guys that his takedown defense, of course, that was his kryptonite as well, but his takedown defense has improved and it's gotten better. And Bichel, it wasn't no easy task taking him down time after time, but Bichel was able to have success doing so. So that tells you the kind of wrestling that he does have. And he also has some slick submissions. I mean, Pichel is not one of these guys that's going to chase submissions that often, but he does have it in him, and he's capable of submitting opponents as well. So in my opinion, he is the better fighter. He's by far the better fighter over Brown. But in that time off, that's why you're seeing the line be close to a pick right now, because with all the time off, Brown has actually picked up some positive momentum in his own right. And Brown is one of those guys that's been a savvy vet, competing obviously, you know, in the European scene for a while, and just one of those guys that, even though he has a decent amount of losses on his resume, I believe 9 overall, I mean, most of it was to okay competition outside of the UFC, of course, but he's the kind of fighter that got better. You know, he learned from his losses and improved his fighting style overall. Now, he is coming off of a very controversial win over John Tuck, but that tells you, I mean, back in the day, he wouldn't have even been competitive with a guy like John Tuck, but he's improved to the point where he was competitive and he was able to steal a controversial close decision over Tuck. So Brown is the type of fighter, again, that he's putting in the work and he's getting better. He's well-rounded as well. I mean, on the feet, he's nothing to laugh at. I mean, you have to take him serious because he has a little bit of power in his punches. He does counter well. He knows, you know, to find his target, meaning that he's pretty accurate with his punches when he wants to be as well. He does have some decent wrestling. He's got a sub game as well. Now, his kryptonite has been guys that can put him on his back, though. I got to say that. So defensively, his wrestling can definitely improve, because if you look at his loss against Patrick, I mean, that's exactly what happened. He wasn't able to stay off his back, and he got grinded out in that fight. So he has to avoid doing so. And I think Pichel, I mean, that's the advantage he has in his fight. That's why I'm going to pick Pichel to win his fight as well. Even if he is a little bit rusty, I think Pichel's wrestling is good enough to probably ground Brown for three rounds and earn himself a decision win, you know, stay busy enough to just to kind of grind out a hard-fought battle over Brown. So I think that's what's probably going to happen here. If it does stay upright and he can't get the takedowns for some reason, I think Pichel will be okay on his feet as well. So he does have all the advantages, but I do think that this is going to be a competitive fight because of the timing of it all and all the circumstances surrounding it. So if this was a couple years ago, Pichel would be a bigger favorite, definitely be a bigger favorite. But it is what it is. It's, I mean, it's right now, it's happening, and I think Pick'em is pretty fair, but I still lean a little bit more towards Pichel because I think, like I said, worst case scenario, as long as his cardio holds up, I think he should be able to get the takedowns, and he is the better fighter. So I think he probably gets the nod here. So I'm going to Pick'em to win.
It's true that when healthy, Vince Pichel probably is the better fighter than Damian Brown, but I don't know. I mean, what assurances do we have that Vince Pichel is the same fighter that he was when he was in the UFC 3 years ago? And even then, you got to remember, this guy got completely tooled by Rustam Khabibov, and then he beat Anthony Njikawani, who was basically on the tail end of his MMA career. And I don't know if even Njikawani was probably cut by the UFC after that loss. Now, Damian Brown, you know, he's not a world beater either. I mean, he didn't look so great in his UFC debut, and then he's managed to eke out a couple victories since. Most recently, that split decision over John Tuck. It wasn't that impressive, but I mean, he was able to get some grappling going. I mean, the guy has an active ground game. He's aggressive with his submissions, but, Brown definitely isn't a world beater either. So, this is definitely a really tricky battle. Now, if this was Vince Pichel right after the Njikawani fight where he had just pulled off that victory, then I would probably be on Pichel's side, but that was 3 years ago. I mean, the guy suffered an orbital injury. He was having double vision for 10 months after that. Then he had a really bad shoulder injury, like a tear in his bicep. I mean, there was so much going on with him. And then he had to stop training because of a workman's comp thing and lawyers and investigators following him around and all kinds of goofy crap if you want to read into what he's been up to the last 3 years. But Pichel's not had it easy, and he hasn't been training the whole time, even when he was finally starting to get healthy again. So I just can't trust him. I mean, yeah, mentally he's probably still right there, but I just don't know where he is physically. And you got to remember, when you lose 3 years after 30, that's even way worse than if you lose them in your mid-20s. So I think Vince Pichel might be in for a rude awakening when he comes back to the UFC. The game has changed so much since he left. So I have to side with Damian Brown. I just cannot pick somebody that's coming off of a 3-year layoff, even if I do think that overall they probably are the better fighter. So I'm going to side with the hometown boy, Damian Brown. Now moving on to the main card on Fox Sports 1, we have Alexander Volkanovski in the featherweight division. He is 14-1, taking on Mizuto Hirota, who is 19-7-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Volkanovski, -300, the comeback on Hirota at +220. Right now, looking for 5 times, it's Volkanovski -470. The comeback on Hirota is +375. So a lot of that is parlay action, some straight action early on as well on Volkanovski. The hype is real on this guy, man. I mean, he had some hype coming into his UFC debut at lightweight against, obviously, Kasuya in his debut. And that was a pretty solid win because Kasuya is not a slouch by any means. I mean, the guy is definitely a talented fighter, and I thought it was going to be a tough matchup for him, but he was able to look really good in that fight and implement his game plan. I mean, Volkanovski is one of these guys that has a wrestling background, a BJJ background, and he's got some power on the feet. So he's another one of these guys that has the ability to finish the fights anywhere it takes place. He's young enough where I think he's just now going to enter the prime of his fighting career. A few more wins under his resume in the UFC, I think he's going to get the confidence and be comfortable in the octagon enough that we're really going to see him perform at another level. So this is a good fight for Volkanovski to take here against a savvy vet in Hirota. Hirota has been one of these guys that's been around the sport for a long time. I have nothing but respect for him. I mean, he's been a veteran of the Japanese scene for a long time, facing really good competition, and he has a striking based background. I mean, the guy is an outstanding striker. I mean, his kicks, his hands, his box, everything that you want to say about him. I mean, he's precise, he's accurate, his timing's well, he's got power on the feet as well. His takedown defense has always been something to look out for. I mean, he has really solid takedown defense. I know he's been beat underground before, I realized that, but overall, when fighters try to take him down, they don't have that much success, depending on, you know, the stylistic matchup, of course. But Hirota does have decent takedown defense, and that really plays in to his hand well, because he has better striking than most of his opponents. So he's able to sprawl brawl in most cases and keep the fight upright and then pick you apart on the feet, land some damaging blows. And then if he has to, I mean, his wrestling has gotten to the point, because he's had to fend off so many takedown attempts from his competitors, that his offensive wrestling is actually pretty solid now as well. And that, in fact, that's helped him get a win in his last fight over Cole Miller. So Hirota is becoming a more well-rounded fighter, but here he's going to have to put up with a high pace from Volkanovski. Volkanovski's going to come in, look for the kill, look for the takedown. Even though Hirota does have good takedown defense, I think he's going to end up getting put on his back in this fight, though. And if Volkanovski gets top position here, I think he's going to start unloading, and it's going to be a tough, tough fight for Hirota. So I think the hype is real. I think it isn't an easy fight for Volkanovski. It's another stern test for him, because Hirota is a savvy vet, but stylistically, it's a fight that I think he can win. So I'm going to pick Volkanovski again. I think all the early action coming in his way is probably right. I mean, at this point right now, I don't think there's any value in betting him, especially over a guy that has the resume of Hirota. So I would stay away from it at this point, but I still think the pick has to be Volkanovski. I mean, again, he's in his backyard as well, and he's a fighter that's on the rise, where Hirota, unfortunately for him, a couple losses, we could probably see him cut from the roster. So I think this is going to be one of those losses. Volkanovski should win his fight.
Yeah, Alexander Volkanovski is a guy that I've been really impressed by. I mean, he made his UFC debut in the lightweight division, a bit undersized, and he didn't just win. He dominated his opponent, Yusuke Kasuya. I mean, that fight was extremely one-sided. He outstruck him 50-4, picked up 3 takedowns, and then just battered Kasuya when he was just repeatedly going for leg locks, just ignored the leg locks, just started just smashing him in the face until the ref finally stopped it mercifully. So, I mean, this guy is a powerhouse. I was so impressed by him. The only problem was it was, you know, last November, so it's been a little while. The good news, you know, he's finally ready. They picked him to fight in Australia, which is a great opportunity for him to fight in front of his hometown fans, and another great veteran for him to battle against. Mizuta Hirota is a guy that has some decent size for the featherweight division. I mean, he's fought at lightweight as well before, and Volkanovski is dropping down to the featherweight division. So that him being just a big physical specimen in the featherweight division, I think he can just push Hirota around. I think he can bully him. I think he can pick up takedowns. I think that he can beat Hirota up on the canvas. Now, on the feet, Hirota's, you know, he's got some pretty good competence on the feet. He's got some pretty fast hands. He can make some things happen, but I think if Volkanovski gets him down, I think he could just beat him up. I think that ground and pound is ferocious. This guy just does not stop. He's tenacious. So I really like Volkanovski. I mean, Hirota's a savvy vet. He's been in there against some great fighters in his MMA career, and even in his UFC career, he's had some good fights. And he's coming off of a decision victory over Cole Miller. So, you know, major props to him, but I just don't think this fight's going to go well. I think, Volkanovski gets the takedowns, and I expect that he gets the ground and pound in. But if he doesn't get the takedowns, maybe Hirota will get enough going on the feet to win a decision, but I don't see it happening. I think, the aggression and persistence of Volkanovski will eventually win him this fight. So I like Volkanovski to probably stop Hirota. As difficult as that may be, I think that he can be that guy that, that gets a stoppage victory over Masuda Hirota, which I think would be the first time in his, at least, UFC career. Now, dropping all the way down to the flyweight division, we have Tim Elliott, who is 15-7-1, taking on Ben Wen, who is 16-6. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Elliott, -150, the comeback on Wen at +110, right now looking over five times. It's Elliott -200, the comeback on Wen is +170, so more action coming in Elliott's way. I'm not really that surprised by that at all. I was kind of expecting it, to be honest with you. But it's tough. I mean, it's tough to give up big value on a dog like Wen as well, especially, I mean, the ability that this guy has. I mean, he's dangerous everywhere. And not that Elliott is not, but I'm just saying that, you know, given a dog price with a guy, I think, especially on the feet, even though both these guys are well-rounded, I think Wynn's a little bit more dangerous on the feet. He's got a little bit more knockout power. His scrambling ability on the ground is pretty impressive as well. And both these guys obviously got pretty sick chokes and submission games to go along with this. So that's why I think this is going to be a fight. This is going to be a lot closer than people are thinking it is. Now, of course, I got to point out some flaws, I guess, right away for each. First of all, Elliott is taking this fight on short notice. Now, Elliott's a game fighter. He's always ready. He's always in camp. He's always been training with decent training partners, and he's just been a professional throughout his career. So he's not going to – this short notice shouldn't hinder him too bad, but it is what it is. I mean, it is a short notice fight for him. He's stepping in for Benavidez. So that tells you the level of Wen. I mean, if the UFC's matching Wen up with Benavidez, I mean, which has fought Demetrius Johnson twice for the title, that tells you that, I mean, they're trying to push this guy up, giving him a chance. Not that he would have beat Benavidez, but they're putting him in, they're giving him an opportunity to do so. Let's put it that way. And the guy on the feet is capable of finishing fights. So you never know. I mean, catching a guy like Elliott or catching a guy like Benavidez, and, you know, that's a huge Wen for him. Now, this fight obviously is, I think, is an easier fight than Benavidez for him, for Wen. Not that it's going to be an easy fight, but I think he's capable of grappling with Elliott. Even though his grappling is off the charts, I think Elliott, that's how he wins the majority of his fights. He's able to out-wrestle people. He's able to scramble with people. He's able to get top position with people on the feet. Elliott actually has a little bit of speed and power in his own right. He's a well-put-together fighter. But this fight is going to be competitive. I'm expecting a lot of scrambles. I'm expecting this fight to take place all over the octagon. I mean, on the feet, I give Wen the advantage there. On the ground overall, I give Elliott a little edge, but I think Wynn's going to be able to get top position on Elliott as well. If he can maintain it, we'll see. But I think he's going to be competitive enough that he could probably steal a decision over Elliott. Now, my kryptonite and flaws for Wen seem to be his cardio. I realize that, especially in that Smoka fight. I mean, that was one of the best grappling exchanges I've seen in a while. I mean, any Smoka fight seems to be that way these days because that's how good the guy is on the ground. But it seems like, I mean, Wen did gas with all those exchanges to the point where Smoka was able to take advantage in that second round and get position on him and then finish the fight. So that is a head scratcher. But then he did bounce back from that fight, and against John Herrera, he looked actually pretty good in his last fight. And again, a different type of matchup for him. I understand the scrambling wouldn't be the same in this spot, so maybe that's why his cardio was a little bit better. But I think it's more because he is improving. He is getting in better shape. He's getting a little bit more comfortable in the octagon as well. I think hopefully he's learned from, you know, kind of going 150 miles an hour. He needs to just kind of pace himself a little bit better, and especially in a fight with Elliott here. He's going to have to pace himself, or it will be a tough, tough fight that will test his cardio for sure. So if any concerns with Wen, it's definitely that cardio more than anything else. Now, of course, you got to point something out that's an eyesore on his resume as well, and that is his knockout ability, or his knockout. He has been knocked out five times, I should say, throughout his career. Now, a lot of those are a while back. He hasn't been knocked out for a few years, so his chin, I don't think, is as bad as that eyesore on his resume. But that being said, you got to kind of watch out for that. But I don't think Elliott knocks him out. I think Wen's chin holds up in this matchup, and I think, if anything, I mean, he's the more dangerous striker, like I said. So I would expect if there's going to be a knockout, it might actually be Wen getting the knockout over Elliott, even though Elliott's tough as nails as well. So this is going to be a scrap. I think it's a dog or pass situation. I think everybody that's betting Elliott and parlaying him is going to kind of be sweating this fight big time. So I'm going to side with Wen. I do go against the grain here, and I think that Wen has a legit shot of, if his cardio holds up, he can win this fight, of out scrambling Elliott, of maintaining some top position with him, and then beating him on the feet. So I think this is a winnable fight for him. So I'm going to go with the underdog Wen to pull off the upset here.
The big red flag for me with Wynn is when he was in there against somebody that was a pretty talented grappler. Now, Luis Smolka is a good grappler, but I mean, he's not a world beater. I mean, it's not like he has any quality wins over any really top UFC flyweights. But when he got matched up with Wynn, I mean, yeah, Wynn had some fun scrambles with him for a while, but I mean, Smolka beat the absolute crap out of him. I mean, that was an absolute beating that he took, and it was hard to watch at times, the amount of punishment he was taking. And it kind of takes me back to, you know, when Tim Elliott was in there against like Luis Godinho and just laid the smackdown on him on the ground for three straight rounds. I mean, Elliott's a guy that, you know, even if he does get a little tired, he just keeps going really hard, and it doesn't even seem like he's tired. So, I mean, he can just push a really high pace for a long time. So what I think happens here is on the feet, Wynn should get the better of Elliott. I mean, he is a way more technically sound striker. He has more punching power on the feet, and he's a more diverse striker on the feet. Elliott is more unique. He's going to throw all kinds of crazy stuff, spinning stuff. He's not the most technical, but he's creative. And so he might hit Wynn with something that he doesn't see coming. But when the fight goes to the ground, I think Elliott, he gets top position because he is the superior wrestler. And when he does get top position, he just starts raining down blows. And he's also a decent at going for submissions. I mean, he's aggressive looking for submissions at times, almost too aggressive. But I think that will play to his advantage here. And I don't think that him taking this fight on short notice should be too much of an issue. He had more than enough time, practically a month, so to prepare. And I'm definitely concerned after seeing Wynn being on the receiving end of such a beating from Smolka, who again is not one of the top flyweights in the division. So I know Wynn bounced back and he looked great in his last fight, but I'm definitely pausing for some concern here just because of the damage he takes from superior grapplers. So if I could be proven wrong, but I think Tim Elliott gets top position and does some damage from that position in this fight. So I'm going to side with Tim Elliott. Probably by decision, but I mean, if he can lay down the damage, then there's a potential for a stoppage as well. Now moving all the way up to the light heavyweight division, we have Ion Cutelaba, who is 12-3 with one no contest, taking on Henrique da Silva, who is 12-2. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Cutelaba -265, the comeback on Da Silva at +185. Right now, looking over at five times, is Cutelaba -320, the comeback is +260 on Da Silva. A little bit surprised because it seems like Da Silva does get some support from the bettors out there and has a little bit of respect. I understand that he hasn't lived up to the expectations. I mean, Da Silva had a little bit of hype coming into the UFC as well. And obviously he beat Christensen in a fight that was, he was doing well in the first round. And then it looked like Christensen was starting to take over a little bit. And he ended up getting I don't want to say come from behind submission, cause he was probably winning that fight, obviously, but he ended up pulling off a pretty nice submission off his back. And then he goes to his next fight, loses to Paul Craig, which I thought he was going to win that fight, honestly, over Paul Craig. But again, Craig on the ground was able to beat him. And then, of course, Jordan Johnson, the wrestler, was able to just kind of grind him out and beat him in his last fight as well. So Da Silva has not lived up to the hype by any means. But the guy does have some ability. He has some ability on the feet. He's got some ability on the ground, obviously, as well. His clinch game's pretty solid. He's got a little bit of power. I mean, he's a dangerous, dangerous fighter. But the problem is against Cutelaba, I'm not sure he's going to be able to have a lot of success, because I'm really impressed with Cutelaba. I understand that, again, same thing you could say about him. I mean, he lost to Cannoneer, and man, that was a great fight. I mean, that was a back and forth. That was a very close fight. It's unfortunate for Cutelaba. He started just gassing a little bit as the fight went on, and Cannoneer was a fresher fighter, and he was able to get that win. But it was close. I mean, and then, of course, Cutelaba has a win over Wilson, and he did lose his debut fight to Sirkunov. So he's been a little bit up and down in his UFC career thus far. But if you look at the skill set Cutelaba has, I like what I see from him on the feet. He's a southpaw. He throws with power. He's got some speed. I mean, the guy can finish fights on the feet. And then on the ground, I mean, he does have a Greco-Roman wrestling background, so he's able to get some takedowns. I think he's going to be the better wrestler here, and I think he can get top position on De Silva on the ground as well. He's got to be careful because De Silva is going to be looking to scramble out or you know, throw up some sub attempts as well. But I think Kudalaba is going to be game enough to avoid those, and then he should be able to control the fight. Now, if he doesn't get the takedowns here against De Silva, even on the feet, I think Kudalaba is going to be a little bit faster and he's going to be a little bit more effective. So I think he is the better fighter here. And I think at age 23, I mean, it's almost kind of surprising that he's still that young, Kudalaba, because he looks a little bit older and he fights like he's a lot more mature than a 23-year-old. That's for sure as well. So I think Kudalaba has a bright, bright future in the light heavyweight division. I mean, the guy is good and he's only going to get better. So I think it's going to be another win on his resume here against De Silva, a solid win for him. I think he's capable of finishing De Silva along the way. If he doesn't get the finish here, I think he at least controls top position enough or controls the fight enough that he gets the scorecard. So Kudalaba is the pick, and it's a pretty confident pick. I think that he's just a better fighter over De Silva. So unfortunately for De Silva, he's going to suffer another loss, and it might be his last time in the octagon.
Yeah, Henrique da Silva had a very strange start to his UFC career. I mean, the guy took repeated beatings in fights and then would, after getting hurt badly, would bounce back and then pick up wild, crazy finishes. Maybe because his opponent spent too much energy trying to finish him, and then he was able to take advantage of that. But regardless, you know, he won his first couple fights in the UFC light heavyweight division, but he's definitely come crashing back to earth in his recent fights. He has not looked good whatsoever. I mean, I was not impressed at all when he took on Paul Craig. I mean, he got dominated in that fight, on the feet and then on the ground and then eventually got submitted. And then in his next fight against Jordan Johnson, a really good wrestler, I mean, he just got taken down over and over and over again, ended up losing a decision. So I think what happens here is De Silva maybe tries to close the distance, maybe get this fight to the floor because he thinks his ground game is better than Kudalaba's. But I think Kudalaba, as Nick mentioned, you know, his wrestling isn't terrible, and he should be able to just keep the fight standing if he wants to. And Kudalaba is extremely aggressive and very powerful on the feet. And I just think he'll be throwing haymakers for three straight rounds. And eventually he's going to clip Henrique da Silva and probably put him out. So I like Kudalaba to not just win, but probably win by knockout. So Kudalaba is going to be my pick. Now, dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Dan Hooker, who is 14-7. Taking on Ross Pearson, who is 21-13 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
This was a tough one for me, honestly, with the respect that, I mean, Pearson, you have to give throughout his MMA career and the UFC career. And Hooker's kind of the younger fighter that's kind of making an impact, recent impact in the UFC right now. So I opened Pearson minus 130, the comeback on Hooker minus 110. Virtually a pick'em fight, laying juice both ways, but slight lean towards Pearson. And the action flipped right away. Everybody was coming in Hooker's way. It got as high as, I think, 200 at one point or around that mark, and now it's back down. Currently, Hooker is minus 145. Pearson is plus 125. So basically right now it's settled from minus 110 to minus 145. Not a big, big drastic move. Line margins have tightened up a little bit. And there is two-way action on this fight, despite the early action on Hooker. This is tough because, I mean, again, I really see the improvement in Hooker's game. I know he's getting a little bit more comfortable. I think he's going to have some advantages in this fight. He is moving up to 155, so he's not going to have a drastic weight cut at 145 pounds. Does that mean that Pearson's going to be a little bit physically stronger than Hooker? Probably so. But Hooker's going to be the taller guy. He's going to have a decent reach advantage over Pearson here in this spot as well. And it's not going to be an easy fight. In fact, even though I opened Pearson as a slight favorite, I actually leaned personally myself a little bit towards Hooker in that regard. That's why I didn't want to give up plus money on Hooker at all. So laying 110 in case the early action was his way, I'd rather have them lay a little bit. And that's exactly what happened. So I'm glad people started laying 110 and up and not getting any plus money as far as the line goes. But that being said, now I think it's getting to the point where Pearson might be getting a little bit disrespect. Pearson, if you look at him throughout his whole career, the guy has been a great fighter. I mean, he's been a very solid lightweight fighter, having quality wins over solid competition. And then not just that, his losses have been all basically, for the most part, split decisions or very competitive fights. So scorecards for him are always close when it goes to the cards, win or lose. I mean, he's in every fight, it seems. So he doesn't really get blown out. Now, of course, if anything, I mean, he is a little bit chinny. He's 32 years old right now as well. So that is one thing you got to be concerned about with Pearson is, I mean, how much, you know, he's fought some wars throughout his career. How much does he have left in the tank? And can Hooker, even though Hooker's not a one punch type of knockout artist, Hooker's long enough and he's strong enough, and especially 155 pounds, he's going to be a little bit fresher, I think. He can be effective against a guy like Pearson. It's not going to take much, I think, to have some success, land a few punches, and maybe clip that chin of Pearson and put him out. So Hooker has some advantages in this fight. On the ground as well, I think Hooker is the more dangerous submission fighter. He's going to be longer, and that length helps on the ground as well as standing. So Hooker has some advantages in this fight, but you cannot count Pearson out at all. And I think early on, a lot of people were basically thinking he's done. Now, Hooker, of course, is going to, again, be the more local guy. He's going to have the crowd behind him a little bit more as well. There's higher expectations for him. I mean, at age 27, again, he's the fighter with the upside. And Pearson, I'm not sure how much time he has left in the UFC. If he gets his W, of course, he's going to keep his roster spot. But I think if he, you know, suffers a couple more losses in a row, we could see Pearson ultimately get cut from the octagon as well, from the roster. So we'll see what happens here. But I am leaning a little bit more towards Hooker, though. I do think that, again, despite the disrespect that people have over Pearson, I think it will be a competitive battle. And I actually think that Pearson is the better boxer, pure boxer. I think Hooker moves pretty well, but he's still hittable despite that. So it's going to be close on the feet. You can't take Pearson lightly, but I do think that it is kind of Hooker's time, and I think he's going to show up and look pretty good here. And I think he might possibly get a finish over Ross Pearson as it goes. If not, it'll be a close fight. I think the scorecards realistically could go either way here in this spot. It's going to be that type of competitive fight if it does hit the card. So it's a tough one, but my slight lean will be on Hooker.
Dan Hooker, he's moving up to the lightweight division from featherweight. I mean, he was cutting a lot of weight to make the featherweight division, so I think this is probably good for him, good for his chin, good for everything. Now, that size is still going to translate. Even though he is a former featherweight, he's got 6 inches in reach on Ross Pearson. He's 4 inches taller, 3 inches in leg reach. So, I mean, if he can fight long, I mean, he can really make Ross Pearson miserable. But Hooker isn't exactly a really technical fighter on the feet. He's got some power. He's aggressive, but he can be outworked. Thankfully, he's fighting a guy in Ross Pearson that doesn't really push a very high pace. I mean, Pearson basically fights to ho-hum decisions. He lets his opponents dictate things. He kind of looks for that one good shot, and I don't know if maybe his power's starting to go, or maybe he just his timing is off, but he hasn't been able to find that one good shot. He really hasn't hurt anybody or finished anybody in a long time. So, in here against Dan Hooker, who is going to have the crowd behind him massively, I think, Pearson could be in some trouble. Pearson definitely does feel like he's on the downswing of his career. He's lost 3 in a row. Granted, you know, the first one was to Will Brooks, the second to Jorge Masvidal, who's one of the top contenders of the welterweight division now. And more recently, you know, a split decision to Stevie Ray. So, you know, it's not like, you know, he lost to bums, but I do think that he is on a decline, and he could be fighting for his UFC career here at 32 years old. So even though I know that he'll probably have a little bit more of a sense of urgency than before, Pearson, it's tough to just completely change your fighting style. And I think that he's going to need to if he wants to start racking up wins. So I think this is Dan Hooker's fight to lose. Even though Pearson is probably the more technically sound striker, I think Hooker could give him some fits with that length. And he does have some power, too. I mean, this guy picked up a pretty crazy knockout in the featherweight division when he was in there against a real savvy veteran like Hatsuhi Yoki. So I think what happens here is Hooker uses the length, he uses the reach, he has he lands a couple good shots. He might even stun Pearson, who has been hurt multiple times in the past and has been finished. So I expect Dan Hooker to walk away with a close decision or maybe a knockout. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the middleweight division, we have Derek Brunson, who is 16-5, taking on Daniel Kelly, who is 13-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Brunson minus 210, the comeback on Kelly plus 160. Looking over at five times right now, it's actually Brunson minus 280, the comeback on Kelly is plus 240. There's been some recent action coming in on Brunson, driving the line up a little bit, and again, people are parlaying him as well. Man, Kelly's been getting some respect. You cannot count that guy out. I mean, to me, he reminds me of the Cinderella Man. I mean, his story is kind of remarkable. The work ethic that, again, he's putting in and his desire to compete and be, you know, amongst the better fighters at 185 pounds. I mean, you got to respect the guy. I honestly, when he came into the UFC after the Ultimate Fighter, I wrote him off completely. I didn't think this guy would go anywhere in his career. But since then, I mean, if you look at what he's accomplished, it's been pretty impressive. I mean, again, outside of the UFC, I understand he came in and he ended up suffering, you know, he got a couple wins, obviously, but he ended up suffering a loss to Sam Alvey. And then I kind of wrote him off a little bit more after that as well, because I thought, all right, man, yeah, this guy's chinny. He's getting old. And then he goes on and puts together a nice little win streak, including wins over Antonio Carlos Jr., Chris Camozzi. And then his last fight, he beat Rashad Evans. I know it's a declining Rashad Evans that dropped down to 185 pounds, but still, I mean, this is the kind of quality Kelly is. He pushes a high pace. The guy puts a lot of heavy pressure on his opponents. Obviously, he's got the judo background to go along with it. So he's not an easy out, man. He's in your face. He can get some takedowns if he wants in most cases as well. And the guy has a little bit of power. Now, of course, he does have some flaws. I don't trust that chin all the way. I know he's a tough guy. And the truth is, he's been getting punched and his chin's held up okay. I mean, he's been getting blasted at the UFC and it has held up outside of the Sam Alvey loss. And then obviously on the Ultimate Fighter show as well, he did get submitted on that show. So you can't take his back and you can't have some success, you know what I mean, in doing so with him. But that being said, since he's been, you know, on this little run, he's looked like a completely different fighter. So I don't know. I'm not totally sold by him, but I do respect what he's doing right now. And Brunson, on the other hand, he's looked pretty good overall, in my opinion. But again, he suffered some iffy type of losses, meaning, the Anderson Silva fight, obviously, most of us thought he should have won that fight. He should have probably won that fight. The Robert Whittaker fight, Brunson fought like a complete knucklehead. I mean, I'm sorry to say it, but I mean, he was so sloppy and so aggressive in that fight. Which aggression is good sometimes, but not when you're that sloppy, and it cost him, right? But his win over Hall before that, his win over Alvey, who has a win over Kelly, you can't do MMA math, so just throw that out the window. But Brunson has been the type of fighter that has improved his stand-up game, getting more confidence in his stand-up game as well. He's just an athlete. I mean, his wrestling is where it's always been. He's able to put most fighters on their back and control the fight and not get submitted. I mean, he's got good sub-defense, so he's a good grappler. Good solid wrestling base, but he's explosive enough on the feet now that he can give fighters trouble there as well. So his conditioning has always been a problem in most cases, for him, but he seems to have addressed that a little bit as well. His cardio and his conditioning has improved a little bit. So if that's the case, Kelly is in some serious trouble here, because I think if Brunson's cardio does hold up and he doesn't, like if Kelly can survive round one and Brunson starts slowing up in round two, he's going to win the fight. But if Brunson's cardio conditioning is good enough to go three strong rounds, Kelly's not going to win this fight. I mean, I think Brunson actually probably knocks him out on the feet, honestly, more than anything else. It's going to be difficult maybe getting Kelly underground, but Brunson, if anybody could do it, man, I mean, he even put Yoel Romero on his back. So Brunson has that kind of special capabilities, you know, in wrestling. He's just a natural, like I said, natural athlete that can get the fight where he wants it in most cases. So I think Brunson can win this fight, whether it's standing, whether it's on the ground. It's just his fight to win or lose. Now, I don't trust his chin all the way. He is a little bit chinny, and Kelly has enough power that he could catch that chin. And again, I said his conditioning is a flaw. So at the price right now, especially over a Kelly that's been on quite a roll, I would not lay 280 or close to 3-1 on this spot. Just pass it. There's more fights ahead. Why would you want to take the risk? I mean, especially with a chinny guy like Brunson, I do think he's going to win this fight, and I think he's going to break this little streak that Kelly has. But as far as a betting standpoint goes, it's not worth it where the current price is right now, for sure. So stay away from it, in my opinion. But I'm going to pick Brunson to win. I think, again, it's been a nice run that Kelly's on, but unfortunately, I think he's just finally going to step up to a level that he's not ready for with Brunson. I think Brunson does get the win here.
Derek Brunson is the type of fighter that I think is Daniel Kelly's nightmare. I mean, Daniel Kelly, you look at how he's been on this wild, crazy run in the middleweight division, and you try to piece together how he's been able to pull it off, and there are multiple things that come up. Either A, he was facing someone that really didn't want to engage him on the feet, and he was just able to eke out a close decision. And in those fights, it was, you know, against Rashad, it was against Patrick Walsh, that terrible, both fights terrible, but he was able to win decisions against fighters that really didn't want to engage. And, or B, he was able to get takedowns and then either finish his opponent on the ground or ride out a decision. And those fights, you know, Chris Camozzi, Steve Montgomery, Luke Zakarich, and then he was able to come back and get the late TKO against Antonio Carlos Jr. So on the ground. So all those fights, you know, he needed to get on top position. And he's facing someone in Derek Brunson that I think is just his nightmare, an absolute nightmare. Brunson has amazing wrestling, so there's just almost zero chance that Kelly's going to be able to close the distance and drag this fight to the floor. And Brunson has just devastating knockout power. I mean, this guy touches people and they go to sleep. I mean, during that crazy run that Brunson went on in the middleweight division, he was just murdering people and he was taking out guys that normally don't get taken out. I mean, just look at this list of Ed Herman and Sam Alvey, Uriah Hall. Like, he just blitzed through them in the first round in seconds. In seconds. It was crazy. It didn't make any sense. I mean, especially, like, Sam Alvey, a guy that's known for having being durable and tough and being able to take a punch. And Brunson just tore through him. So, in this fight specifically, Brunson's going to have a 7-inch reach advantage. 7 inches. So, for somebody that has that much power to be able to get that much closer than Daniel Kelly to their opponent, man, I think that that is just asking for it. So with Daniel Kelly, I just don't see how he can win. I really don't. I mean, I don't see him getting this fight to the floor, and then I don't see him being able to win a close type of decision because his opponent's not engaging, because I think Derek Brunson sees this fight and he is licking his chops, because this is not like a Robert Whittaker where, you know, somebody that's got the defense to weather your early storm and then start cracking you back. Daniel Kelly just does not have the striking credentials, and he doesn't have the athleticism. He's just a sitting duck in there. I think Daniel Kelly doesn't just lose. I think he loses in devastating fashion. And Brunson gets back on track with one of those just blistering first round knockouts. So Derek Brunson is my pick. Now, moving on to the main event of the evening in the heavyweight division, we have Derek Lewis, who is 18-4 with one no contest, taking on Mark Hunt, who is 12-11-1 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Lewis -175, the comeback on Hunt at +135. Looking over five dimes right now, it's actually Lewis -135, the comeback on Hunt is at +115. And there has been, from the get-go, action coming in on Hunt. It's been, I don't want to say one way, but it's been mostly coming in on dog action with Mark Hunt. And this is a tough one as well, because you got Hunt is the aging veteran. He's 43 years old. I mean, he has one punch knockout power, another veteran that I have a ton of respect for, man. I mean, Mark Hunt could have had an easy way out, could have got his contract, of course, he could have got paid basically by the UFC and just kind of let go and release, but he wanted to prove that he wanted to perform well in the heavyweight division. He wanted to prove that he can make a run in the UFC, and he's been putting in the work to the point where he got his takedown defense pretty respectable. And then, of course, he's one of the hardest hitters, heaviest hitters, most dangerous strikers in the UFC heavyweight division, in the history of the division. I mean, special striker, tons of power. And I mean, if you're a chinny person, you're not going to withstand Mark Hunt, that's for sure. But his kryptonite is still the ground. I just mentioned he does have some decent takedown defense, but once you do get him to the ground, I mean, that's a problem with him. He doesn't scramble up all that great, especially if you're heavy from top and you can have your way with him. I mean, that's how Brock Lesnar was able to beat him. That's how a lot of fighters were able to get Mark Hunt down on the ground. Stipe was getting takedowns and pounding him on the ground as well. I mean, you can mention quite a few, but he's improving because it used to be you get Hunt down, you could grab his arm and Kimura the guy, and that's it. I mean, he'll tap real quick. So give the guy credit where credit's due, but still his kryptonite is definitely the ground game. And his age, I mean, 43 years old, he definitely slows down as the fight progresses a little bit. Lewis, on the other hand, man, I don't know about this guy. I mean, he's definitely a beast. I mean, his nickname is very fitting. He is one of those guys that even though he doesn't have the most dynamic stand-up game, I mean, it's not like you're going to be ultra impressed with his striking, but he does have a ton of power, and his striking is improving to the point where you can't take him lightly on the feet. But his best attribute is getting the fight to the floor, getting top position, and then just pounding you out. When he's on top, I mean, he is one of the most dangerous ground and pound hitters in all of the heavyweight division. There's no question about that. So Hunt needs to keep that takedown defense up to par for this fight, because if he gets put on his back, Lewis is going to get top position and he's going to finish Hunt. Hunt needs to keep the fight upright and land one of his big bombs and put Lewis out. Because if anything, again, kryptonite for Lewis has been he's a little bit chinny. I mean, it's kind of unfair to say because he's been a little bit better recently, but I know he's been on a little roll here. But before that, before his roll, he was knocked out by Sean Jordan. He was knocked out by Matt Mitrione. So you can definitely clip him and knock him out. But again, he seems to improve his defense a little bit. I mean, he went the distance with a guy like Roy Nelson and he get knocked out. And Roy Nelson in a lot of ways you could compare to a guy like Mark Hunt as well. So, I mean, obviously Hunt's the better striker of the two, but I mean, there's a lot of similarities, big one punch knockout power or whatnot, even the size, the frame, all that stuff for Lewis. So Lewis has definitely improved along the way. He's got some quality wins beating the likes of, I mean, Gonzaga, again, Roy Nelson, Abdurakhimov. I mean, that was impressive. Abdurakhimov was winning that fight, dominating that fight, but he outlasts his opponent. I mean, and this is time and time again, Lewis will do this. If you have iffy cardio and you're beating Lewis, he can ride it out and then just put it on you and come back and win. Exactly what he did to Abdurakhimov. So that was pretty impressive. And then, of course, in his last fight, I mean, withstanding the pressure of Travis Brown early and then coming back, and we saw what happened in that fight. I'm disappointed for Brown, but at the same time, that was a heck of a performance from Lewis. So Lewis is stringing together some quality wins. He's getting more experience, getting more confident, and stylistically, I think he's going to be the younger, fresher fighter here. So if his chin holds up and he doesn't get plastered by one punch from Hunt, he's going to win this fight. So I have to lean a little bit more towards him. I mean, this is another fight that you can't have a ton of confidence either way, because both guys definitely have paths to victory. But I think what's going to happen here, if Lewis is tough enough to withstand the early onslaught by Hunt, he's going to probably take over as Hunt starts gassing a little bit as well. I mean, this is kind of a blueprint for Lewis now. And if he gets the fight to the ground and gets top position, Hunt's done. So slight lean towards Lewis in this spot. I think he's probably going to come away with the win here.
Derek Lewis has been on a hell of a run in the heavyweight division, and I have repeatedly and consistently picked against him anytime he was facing a guy that was a good striker that could keep it standing or somebody that I thought might be able to drag him to the floor. And he has consistently denied me of all of those upsets or all the times that I've picked against him, at least during this run. I think I've picked against him about at least 3 times during the run. Now, against Mark Hunt, Lewis will be at a striking disadvantage in terms of technique, because Hunt is just devastating when he is able to connect with you. I mean, the guy has massive knockout power with his hands. The guy has pulled off some of the best walk-off knockouts that you've ever seen. Now, Hunt's issue is his chin is starting to go. So even though Lewis is not, you know, even in his universe, technically, if Lewis is able to connect with something heavy, Hunt's going to be in big trouble. Now, where Lewis does most of his damage is on the ground. He's not a great wrestler, but from top position, he has, in my opinion, the best ground and pound of any fighter in MMA. Like, it's not like he's able to hold his position better than anybody. It's just when he's on top, he doesn't just win fights. He puts people out cold. And Derek Lewis has massively heavy hands, and that ground and pound is just ferocious. So if he can get Mark Hunt on his back, say goodnight to Mark Hunt. Maybe, you know, start planning the funeral. It's that bad. But that being said, Mark Hunt, his defensive wrestling has improved quite a bit. I mean, you don't see him getting put on his back unless he's facing really good wrestlers. You know, Brock Lesnar was able to do it. Stipe Miocic was able to do it. But that's pretty much been it. So Lewis is going to have his work cut out for him if he wants to get this fight to the floor. Now, if it stays on the feet, I think Hunt should be at a bit of an advantage. That being said, man, you have to wonder when Mark Hunt's decline is really going to start to go. I mean, we have seen that the chin is declining for sure. I mean, he is definitely taking a lot more damage on the feet than he used to, and he's getting knocked out more consistently than he used to. But, I mean, the power is definitely still there. Before he was on this more recent two-fight losing streak, he did pick up some knockout victories over Frank Mir and Antonio Silva. So, Derek Lewis is a guy that has been knocked out and has been knocked out in the UFC by good strikers. You know, he got knocked out by Matt Mitrione. He got knocked out by Sean Jordan, an athletic striker. And he was in big trouble against Travis Brown in that first round. So there definitely is the possibility that Mark Hunt, if he connects, could put Derek Lewis's lights out. I am not ruling that out for 1 second. But I also have to side with the guy that's on the momentum, the guy that's got that belief in himself. And I think even though he's coming into hostile territory here, I think Derek Lewis can pull this off, because as much as I keep repeatedly picking against him, he is consistently proving me wrong, which he might prove me wrong just by going out and losing this fight. But I do think that Derek Lewis can win. I think he can get top position at some point, and I think he will get top position at some point, and I think he can finish this fight with ground and pound. So my pick is going to be Derek Lewis. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 110. Now, our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsBreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Time Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.